Good morning, everybody. We are here live on Facebook. It's Sunday again, and Justin and I are going to be speaking of this wonderful source that Justin's chosen, and we're really happy as always to be with you. And welcome to anybody new who's here this week. We are so grateful when new people join, and it's amazing to us to just know that there are people listening and commenting and being with us. So welcome to everybody, and welcome to this topic that Justin has chosen, which feels really rich and probably another one of those ones that we could talk about for days and days and days. And we have our half an hour, or brackets a little bit more than half an hour, slot to do it in. So hello, and Justin and I are going to read this Paradox of Change passage by Lawrence Kushner for you today. Justin, do you want to say hi?
I do. Morning, afternoon, evening, everybody, depending upon when you're listening to this. Is the wonder of technology that you could be with us live or joining us at any point in the future. So, like Lizzie, I'm always so glad that we're together and we get to do this. one of the things I wanted to say about this source before we read it is, and I didn't check this out with you, Lizzie, before we started, but I think you might see it this way. This that we're going to explore together is in many ways at the heart of the kind of coaching work that we do and that we teach. And I'm mindful of that because, first of all, because it's work that's really important to both of us, and also because we are teaching it in the very near future. So if you're listening to this in April and you happen to be free on the 30th of April and the 1st of May, then I'm going to be in London doing a really in-depth introduction to integral coaching and all that's around it, of which I think this is a really good expression of some of the central principles. And we're starting our year program in July. So in June, in fact. So as you join us in this conversation, there are a couple of different ways of looking at this. One is, what is it for us to change? And the second that I have in my mind is, what is it to be someone who can help another person in change when it's called for? And how often the strategies and approaches that we have for helping one another don't help because they're not pointed in the right direction. They don't take into account what we are, what it is to be a human being. So both of those were very much behind me bringing this source, as is, I'm in the middle of reading this book, and it's an extraordinary and beautiful book. So this is from a book mysteriously titled God Was in This Place and I, big I, comma, little I, did not know, which I thought was a typo when I first saw the book, and it turns out not, the big I, little I turns out not to be a typo at all. And it's a really beautiful exploration, partly about what it is to be human, partly about, I was going to say, a distinctively Jewish way of looking at this question. But as in all things that come from the Jewish tradition, there are in fact 10 distinctively different Jewish ways of looking at this question in the book. And this one is right from near the end of the book, where he starts to get into a huge inquiry that we may get into together. Who knows? See how we go this morning. What is a human being really? So shall I read first, Lizzie?
Yeah.
Here we go. It's called The Paradox of Change. Not until we recognize our bondage can we begin to move toward freedom. It's a paradox. Change begins not by trying to change. And what you imagine you must do in order to change yourself is often the very force that keeps you precisely the way you are. How else can you explain the years and decades of your own foiled plans for growth and broken resolutions? Consumed by an apparent passion to be other than who you are, you try to be who you are not. but in doing so succeed only in being a person who's trying to be other than who you are. Thus, the goal is self-discovery, the discovery not of another self, but of one's true self, beneath all the layers of wanting to be different, self-dissatisfaction, pretense, charade, and denial is a self. This self is the living dynamic force within everyone. And if you could remain still long enough here, now, in this very place, you would discover who you are. And by discovering who you are, you would at last be free to discover who you yet also might be. You can be who you are, or you can pretend to be who you are not. If you choose the latter, as most of us have done since adolescence, an infinite variety of self-deceptions lie before you. You can pretend to be wise when you're ignorant, weak when you're strong, courageous when you're timid, confident when you're unsure. There's no end to the list. But remember this, none of these pretensions, no matter how noble, appropriate, or convincing, will fashion genuine change. They will instead require increasingly greater amounts of energy and enmesh you in increasingly complicated nets of deception. Or you can cease pretending to be someone you are not and discover at this moment who you are. Who am I writing these words? Who are you reading them?
The paradox of change. Not until we recognize our bondage can we begin to move toward freedom. It's a paradox. Change begins not by trying to change. And what you imagine you must do in order to change yourself is often the very force that keeps you precisely the way that you are. How else can you explain the years and decades of your own foiled plans for growth and broken resolutions? Consumed by an apparent passion to be other than who you are, you try to be who you are not. But in so doing, succeed only in being a person who is trying to be other than you are. Thus, the goal is self-discovery. The discovery not of another self, but of one's true self. Beneath all the layers of wanting to be different, self-dissatisfaction, patience, charade, and denial is a self. This self is a living, dynamic force within everyone. And if you could remain still long enough here, now, in this very place, you would discover who you are. And by discovering who you are, you would at least be free to discover who you yet also might be. You can be who you are, or you can pretend to be who you are not. If you choose the latter, as most of us have done since adolescence, an infinite variety of self-deceptions lie before you. You can pretend to be wise when you're ignorant, weak when you are strong, courageous when you are timid, confident when you are unsure. There is no end to this list. But remember this, none of these pretensions, no matter how noble, appropriate, or convincing, will fashion genuine change. They will instead require increasingly greater amounts of energy and enmesh you in increasingly complicated nets of deception. Or you can cease pretending to be someone you are not and discover at this moment who you are. Who am I writing these words? Who are you reading them?
I got thinking about so much from reading this. But one part that has really struck me over the last couple of days, Lizzie, is this part where he says, no matter how noble, no matter how appropriate, it seems all of our attempts to be what we're not are doomed to become a kind of slavery of themselves. And I thought this was a mind-blowing, for me, turning my thinking inside out claim that he makes at the beginning, which is that it's our very attempts to be what we imagine we ought to be that become the kind of neurosis that we're caught in. Like, And so the one that's become very apparent for me in my own life recently, I was talking to someone I really love and respect, and I was talking about joy, and I was saying how increasingly I felt that cultivating joy was important in my life. And here's how I said it to her. I said, I may have said this to you, Lizzie. I said, I feel like I have a responsibility to be joyful.
Mm.
And she said to me, that's so interesting that you said responsibility to be joyful, responsibility. And as I looked at it, it's become more and more apparent to me how much of what I've efforted towards, really put an enormous effort to and continue to do, is to be responsible, even to be responsible for being joyful.
Mm-hmm.
And I so easily get into this repetitive structure where what I'm doing is, without even knowing it, and I think that's why a piece of text is so important like this, I don't even know that that's what I'm doing all the time if I'm not onto it, is I'm being the one who takes myself to be something less than responsible, which is itself a big part of the mistake. Mm-hmm. Oh, who am I? I'm the irresponsible one. And now I have to work really, really hard all the time to be responsible, and all the time keep on looking for the ways in which I'm not responsible enough. And when I finally get responsible enough, then I'll be free. And this was so powerful in cutting through this, because what I started to see in it is that my very attempt to be responsible and to deny ways in which, just by being a human being, I am this virtue of responsibility that's part of all human life, by denying that of myself, by saying that it's not true and trying to grab it, I keep myself stuck in exactly the same kinds of ongoing suffering and constriction, even when it looks like what I'm trying to do is free myself. I mean, here's the point I think that I'm trying to get to, is I've had it, like I'm saying, so out of view for myself that I'll get free when I'm responsible enough. And that itself is the very structure that keeps me enmeshed and far, far away from what it is to be from any really deep understanding of who I am.
Mm. I just want to name, Justin, and maybe other people feel this too, it's like there's something about speaking of us this way that's really confusing, like the nature of paradox and the personality and humanness. It feels like by even speaking of it, it's doing the job that it's asking to be done in the world, which is that even in the hearing of what you're saying and in the entertaining in this moment of what paradox is, i.e. when you want to change, trying to change is the very thing that stops you changing. Talking about it makes me go there's some kind of, it provides, like in the language we might use, Justin, like a breakdown in obviousness very immediately and cleanly, which means that I don't know anything anymore quite instantly. It has that quality to it, which is, okay, so if the thing that I'm trying to do is not the thing that works for the thing I'm intending, what then? And in that opening feels like what our work is. We work in that opening where we don't know what to do and we're confused and our strategies have been revealed to us in some kind of sometimes horrible way where we go, oh, there's got to be something different happening here. I need to shift. I need to change something about my life because this is not working. And I'm wanting to name that because I can feel it in my response to what you're saying, which is I feel the kind of palpable, oh God, well, if that doesn't work, to be responsible, and then you would be free, given that that's your best strategy right now to freedom, what do you do? you know, really, what do you do? What do we do? And so I'm just wanting to name that this topic of self, which in a way is the thing that gets revealed in the breakdown of in obviousness. It gets revealed in not taking up the strategy that I normally take up to do the thing that I intend, to have the thing that I intend happen, but something else. And that something else is so unusual for us to take up as a human being. And it's so terrifying, and there's so much it feels at stake to do that. You know, for you to stop being responsible, it feels like, when I'm imagining it for myself, it feels like the world would fall apart. And then my inner critic was like, well, none of the bills would get paid, none of the food would get cooked, none of the, you know, there's this kind of worry about putting down the strategy in favor of something else that is unknown, that is uncharted in my life before. It's a really big thing to put down those things that I think are going to get me where I intend, i.e. if I'm responsible, I will be free. To put that down when it feels like my whole life has been invested in it. You know, like you said, most of us have done this since adolescence. You know, we learned our strategies very well, very thoroughly. And to not do that feels like some kind of floating in no man's land or something risky. I know for me, it's like if I make, you know, and I'm kind of harking back to my adolescence now and the kind of journey since then, if I make enough things fun and good and entertaining for myself and other people, that will be what happiness is. That will be what freedom is to make things good, to bring things up, to energize things and people and situations. And then when I do that, I would have had the experiences of happiness and joy that I wanted, and therefore my whole life would be complete. And like, that sounds like quite a legitimate strategy as I'm talking about it. Like, I get it. But I also know that it's empty. At the end of the day, there's not enough, ironically, like deep satisfaction in a life where I've just tried to manufacture goodness and fun. And in our cultural narrative, that's a really normal thing to do. That's a really credible thing to do, like bringing joy. And of course, there's the light side of it too. But I certainly know that it has been very necessary for me to put that down if I wanted a life, actually, and I wasn't just left like a kind of a balloon that had all the air taken out of it, shoved on the side of the pavement because I've used all my energy up in service of something that didn't have any substance. So I love the way that this points to development so cleanly and clearly, and that it's providing us a path, or at least the beginning of an inquiry of a path that invites us into something other than the strategies.
You're picking up how difficult this is to speak about and how confusing it is so important. And I'm really grateful to hear you say your example, Lizzie, from your own life. Because I suppose one of the things it reveals to me that I hope might be helpful as a way of talking about this is, when I heard you say that your strategy has been to bring joy and light to people, and that when you have done that sufficiently, like there's some game that you can play here that you'll win. When you said it so clearly, you said, when I've done that enough, in a way, my life will be complete, and then I'll be able to live. So here's what struck me. The first thing that struck me was that part of the paradox is that in order to set up your life like you have to bring joy everywhere and you haven't done it enough, is already to be living in an understanding of yourself that cuts off a huge part of yourself. So the part of you, Lizzie, that is joyful light, that's already present even when you are angry or rageful or confused or bored or whatever, that's an expression of being a human being. When you live that way, and we have to talk about ourselves in order to talk about it, you have to take up the, and we all do this, you have to take up the stand of, that's not me. Joy and light and delight is not me. And it's something I have to manufacture because I'm always deficient in it. You're always deficient. And when you've manufactured enough of it by your constant effort and reached some, I don't know, mythical place where it's sufficient. And so part of the problem is that built into this way of living is a split in us. There's a something that we've taken ourselves already not to be or not to be enough. We have to make our lives about making it, which means that we're actually leaving out, I wish I could find a more eloquent way of saying this, but leaving out some deep part of our aliveness and humanity, discounting it. And it seems so obvious to us that if we manufacture it, that we'll get free, but that itself is the slavery. It's the manufacturing of it. See, I know this about you, which is that for you to be present in a room and to be angry or annoyed or disappointed or something is still full of light and joy and it's still present. Because to be a human being is to be, well, this is the question, right? What is it to be a human being? And I'm going to say for the moment is to be life. Mm. So we're not a game to win. We're a living process, and our attempts to win the game and to have it all sorted. I mean, this is very much how it feels to me about responsibility. What I mostly see is all the ways forever that I've been far, far short of being responsible enough. So I'm constantly trying, and not only is that, like you say, it's a very narrow way to live. Can be a very painful way to live. It also cuts off the very thing that is already true. So it's not, I wanted to get this in. You said this, that it felt to you when I was talking about responsibility that this would mean, well, so the alternative is irresponsibility, like I'll give up responsibility, but it can't be that either, because that's just the mirror image. So now I'll be the person who's irresponsible. Mm. And I won't pay the bills and I won't. So this is one of the reasons why it's so hard to talk about is that as long as we frame it as being on the inside, from the inside of this project to somehow be something, and usually a quality or a virtue that we imagine we are not, like responsibility, goodness, or joy, or courage, or love, or, you know, just look at all of us who are desperately trying to be love and to be loved. Mm. And in the process, we distance ourselves from our own just genuine capacity to be love for people and to notice when love is coming our way. So it's not giving up love to be dislikable or hateful or something. It's what Lawrence Kushner says in the middle. He says if you could remain still long enough here, now, in this very place, you would discover what he says in the sentence before, that the self is a living dynamic force that's in everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And ourselves are not so different to one another.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is the, you know, when he's saying that the work is to find out who you are, I'm not even sure, Lizzie, he's saying that you should find out, Lizzie, who you uniquely are, that's like so incredibly different from everybody and everything else, that when you find it, you go, ah, that's the unique Lizziness in the world. And now, I don't actually think he's saying that. Yeah. At least it's not how it occurs to me, that's another version of the same project.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're, I feel invited into this question of when we talk about self, I think we can get like, well, who am I? And it's so easy for our personalities to hook on to the I. As you're saying, is, well, what's unique about me? And the tricky thing is that that's possibly still the same mechanism, which is now I'm in the story of being so myself. And then when I'm really myself, then I could live. So it's almost like we have to be really on it to really distinguish between when we're getting hold of something and doing the same thing again, but just with different content. And I guess for me, at the beginning of this call, when I felt really confused, in some way I know that that's more present than my capability in terms of understanding what something is, i.e. if I'm confused and I don't know anything, is how it feels to me, I think I might then be onto something. But the personality says, no, you're just confused and a bit stupid and you don't know what you're doing. But actually it's something other than what my normal habitual way of being in the world is, which means it's an invitation into contact with self, because it's not fixing something down. I'm not in that moment in the know. I'm in contact with, if you like, something other than a habitual personality pattern. And to be able to tolerate that, given what we're taught about knowing what you're doing and being together and sorted and whatever. And I think that's why we are in lots of ways such advocates of the mess of life, because in the mess we often get to be in contact with something other than our strategies. And I'm appreciating what paradox is to provide that opening really quickly and really efficiently when I'm so good at like turning everything into the same project, basically. So paradox kind of stops me doing that. It kind of holds me to the thing that I'm really interested in, actually, which is this thing you're saying, that what if this self is actually not very different to the self that I'm perceiving anyway, from one body to another, is sitting over there in North London. There's a commonality of presence of self that isn't obvious to the personality, to the way I habitually see. And yet when I'm invited into the inquiry of what that might be, now things get interesting, even if they're frightening, even if it's unfamiliar, even if it's, I want to run, even if I feel bored, even if, you know, whatever my reactions are, the nature of paradox drops me in to something other than the strategies that I'm mostly participating in life.
It's so important what you're saying, that we have to allow ourselves to be confused. And to get that most of our attempts to feel certain are another version of the same strategy that we've had all along. What I think you're calling the personality strategy, this part of us that's learned to get on in the world and get liked or get points or get ahead or get approved of or disapproved of, whatever. And that that the very tempting thing to do is to just do another version of what we've been doing all along. So if it turns out that being responsible isn't working for me, well, I'll try. Like, you see, this is what gave it away when I was speaking to my, so the person I was speaking to was, I got as far as, well, there's really not much joy in trying to be responsible all the time. So now joy ought to be my project. In fact, I ought to be responsible. I have to be, this is how I said it. I'm seeing that I have a responsibility for joy. Blam, there it is. Even being joyful is now a version of responsibility. Even being irresponsible might be a version of being responsible in my hands. If I'm not prepared to do what you're saying and what Lawrence Kushner is saying, which is there's a certain amount of, we have to let go and allow ourselves to be in this very We have to surrender to something that's way bigger than ourselves or way more mysterious than we know, because as many, I think, very insightful people have said in different ways along the way, to be a person isn't to be a thing. It isn't to be in a game, a finite game where when we win it, everything's fine. When I get entertaining enough or joyful enough or playful enough or responsible enough, it will all be okay, because being a person is much more like being, if we can even give any language to it, it's much more like being a process or life itself, or like a river or something that is always moving and tumbling. And all of our attempts of our personality are, in a way, there are attempts to squeeze something very, very, very big and alive and mysterious through a very, very small aperture. And we're trying. When I finally got this pinned down, I get my life through this tiny aperture, then, except that's not what life is. Oh, already we get to the boundaries of what's possible with language. So I feel like I say that again. Well, that's not how I want to say it. And yet, so that's why one of the things I appreciate about Lawrence Kushner's question, who am I writing this? Who are you reading this? And what happens when we find out right here? And the other part of this that struck me that came from what you were saying, Lizzie, was that so much of the contemporary project to find your authentic self is actually another version, which is the idea that there's an authentic me that is mine and mine alone. That when I find that authentic self, being authentic is expressing that one unique fixed truth about myself, like the something that's written through me, like a stick of rock or something, I think is in the end, noble as it might sound, turns out to be another version of trying to squeeze our lives through a very tiny aperture, because we're never that either.
Yeah.
And that's why we get into so much pain trying to be authentic, if that's your definition of what authentic is.
Yeah.
We never find it. Doesn't matter how hard we look. We never find that in a way that satisfies us, that it's the end truth that I can stand on.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think also there's like, what I'm appreciating, Justin, is that there's a kind of, no matter what work we're doing with our personalities to become more real, and the word you're using is authentic, there's also a kind of a bigger truth wherever you are on the journey that is there holding the work you're doing. You know, that this question of identity that you're bringing of, you know, really, who am I writing this? Who am I reading this? Who am I speaking this? You know, the great question of who, that is always there inviting us into it if we choose to wonder. And I also appreciate, though, this thing about pretense and the way that Lawrence Kushner writes, you know, you can pretend to be wise when you're ignorant and weak when you're strong, courageous when you're timid and confident when you're unsure. And I'm appreciating him pointing that out, because it helps to realize that there are these compensations happening that make up these strategies. And for us to be aware of and then say something about or admit to people around us the underlying thing that we're compensating for by being the way that I'm being and using the strategy that I'm being is kind of a way into the question of who am I. And I know that feeling so well of like, oh, I'm feeling really worried about something today. I think I'm going to be efficient. And then I get really efficient and really good at something. And actually what's underlying is that I'm really worried that it's not going to be okay. And I'm kind of covering it over with efficiency or getting things done. And I'm just appreciating the marriage of these two, I don't know what you would call it, like two layers or two realms one of the personality and what we're doing with these strategies, and the other realm of us kind of spiritually inquiring question around who's doing all of that anyway. It's like the thing beneath or something. And there's all this stuff going on multiple surface layers of us. And underneath it all is this deeper question that you're bringing of, well, who's even believing that they're weak or they're strong? Who's even deciding to employ that strategy? And it feels a really beautiful kind of holding of both to be in that. And I think one without the other doesn't really wash when we're in this path. You know, we can't just say, oh, well, none of that personality stuff matters because I'm seeking for who I am in the world, because it will be in there anyway. And if we just focus on psychology and spirituality doesn't get a place in there, it doesn't have the richness that's required for us to experience a depth of contact with ourselves and life and each other. So it's like those two things feel like a really important combo that I think Lawrence Kushner kind of poetically weaves together in this lovely passage.
The last thing I'm going to say on this, looking at the time, inspired really by what you're saying, Lizzie, is that part of the work here is not trying to get, like you say, efficient or not efficient. Trying to get, like, I have to be efficient, or now because efficiency is a trap for me, I have to be not efficient. All of those strategies of trying to get ourselves to be a thing,
yeah,
in the end are unhelpful, or I'm spiritual and not practical, or I'm,
yeah,
any of these divisions. The way of saying it that seemed to be having some resonance for me right now is the work of becoming porous, so that all of life flows through, so that my efficiency and inefficiency, my responsibility and my irresponsibility, my love and my not love can all flow through, that the work of allowing life to flow through, of being way, way open rather than trying to find some narrow version that is the right one. I point the nozzle in the right place. No.
Yeah.
And that's why so much of this is actually a kind of surrender. It's the hardest thing for us to do. But not a surrender from life, a surrender into life.
Yeah. And also, I have to say before we end, that none of this feels possible without being in relationship with other human beings. It's too frightening. It's too scary. It's too difficult. It feels like to be in presence of someone else who sees us and gets us, in order that we would be safe enough to say, yes, actually, I'm feeling really weak and all my compensations are being strong right now. Like to do that and to feel the shame sometimes and the humiliation of our own doing to ourselves, to be in contact with somebody in the doing of that, in the saying of that, in the feeling of that. It feels like it has to be that way, that our wish to create relationship and community around being a person and being a human being is the container into which all of these inquiries can happen. Without that, it just feels too difficult.
Which is why we're doing this together, and why we coach and teach and make community, and people do this in so many different forms. So we're going to end. We've gone on for a little longer than promised today, but sometimes, hey, that's what it takes. And there's many, many hours and weeks and years on this topic, I think, that are really called for. For all of you who are still with us, the book is Lawrence Kushner's God Was in This Place, and I Did Not Know. And you can always find the sources if you're part of the Facebook group. You can always find the posts in our Facebook group. And if you're joining us on YouTube or by some other means, then everything is always available on our website, turningtowards.life. And we're going to say goodbye for this morning. And if the world keeps on turning the way it has been, we will be back 9 o'clock in the morning, UK time, next Sunday morning.
Yes, we will. Thank you, everybody, for being with us. We'll see you next week.